Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this Friday, May 17th, 2024. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 3:30, we're going to welcome in Ben Aberline, Community Engagement Director with United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties. Looking forward to catching up with Ben and talking a little United Way. Looking forward to talking with our good friend, Senator Patrick Teston, right now, joining us on the phone lines. Good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, James. Yourself?
Doing well. Doing good. Great to hear from you and great to be able to catch up with you. You've been very busy. Wanted to start, if you don't mind, talking about your the Senate's floor session this past week where they voted to override the governor's veto of several bills, including this your Advanced Practice Registered Nurse Modernization Act. Before we get into some of the other bills, do you mind if we touch on that bill, why it was so important to you, why you pushed for this so hard, and where we are with it now?
Yeah, I mean, so this past Tuesday, the Senate came in, and we did veto overrides on 9 different pieces of legislation that the governor had vetoed for one reason or another. And I think it's critically important because some of these bills directly impact our areas of the state and impact every corner of the state for that matter. And one of those bills was my legislation as it relates to allowing our advanced practice registered nurses to operate at the highest level of their license. So one of the highlights, and there weren't very many highlights throughout the course of the pandemic, was that many of the restrictions that are currently placed on our APRNs were removed. And as a result of that, the good news is that quality of care didn't diminish. In fact, it actually improved, actually empowering our providers to take care of patients. And the reason why this is so critical is that 1 million Wisconsinites live in underserved areas where there aren't enough healthcare practitioners within their respective communities. And this is legislation that has been implemented in 27 other states, including Minnesota and Iowa. So at a time when other legislation has been enacted, for instance, the governor recently signed new legislation to create a new healthcare provider in the form of dental therapists. And alongside that, the continuation of supporting things like interstate medical licensure compacts that make it easier for providers to cross state lines. So it was unfortunate that the governor vetoed this legislation, but I think it's imperative that this legislation get enacted, which is why I pushed as hard as I did to ensure that the APRN Modernization Act was on the veto override calendar. Because as we've seen in other states, any other state that has allowed these advanced practice nurses to operate at the highest level of the license have never gone back to a more restrictive model. And in fact, there is even evidence to show that, you know, when these APRNs encounter a patient or a situation that goes above and beyond their practice or their scope of practice, that they refer to a physician, which is exactly what this legislation aims to do. And so my hope is that with our actions taken on Tuesday, that at some point, I hope the assembly comes back to follow suit. And I really hope that we can find some folks from across the aisle to join with us in the assembly to enact this much critical needed legislation.
You touched on a little bit of the history of this, and I know that there are certain bills where you see something in society or see something in your constituents or your community, and you kind of head it. But this was feels like one that came to you from your constituents. They came to you with this concern. Is that how this got started?
Yeah, I mean, there's been plenty of folks within my Senate district that have supported this, and I can't honestly take credit for this legislation. I mean, This bill has been around for the better part of a decade now, and it's taken many different forms and different approaches. Last session was the first session that I was the author of it, and, you know, it was the first time that it advanced out of both houses. Unfortunately, it got vetoed last session. This go-around, we sort of recalibrated and worked to and tried to negotiate with Governor Evers on this, and I thought we came pretty close. There were a few provisions that quite frankly, from my perspective and the perspective of many of the stakeholders in support of this bill, weren't necessarily germane to this bill. And because really this legislation is basically about empowering our healthcare professionals and our workforce. And as I told the governor prior to his veto, and this was a couple of months ago when I met with him in his office, I said, Governor, some of the other issues that you would like to see in this bill that aren't included, I'd be more than happy and willing to work with you next session on this if I have the privilege to come back. But from my standpoint, this is so needed right now that we really need to focus on the crux of this bill, which is workforce development and empowering our providers to do the jobs they're trained to do.
To that point, it does look like in the amendments to ease stakeholders, the governor, the original bill was amended to require that APRNs refer to physicians and other healthcare providers when a case is outside of their expertise. That seems like something that was a key part of the addition. And while veto might get a lot of people's eyes when they see the headlines or something, to me, I'm seeing both people working together to compromise. And oftentimes that means the best for our communities.
Well, now it's certainly the intent that we put forward in trying to negotiate and act in good faith. In fact, one of the other provisions, and it was an amendment that was added the same day that we voted for it on the Senate floor, the governor was at 4 years training and experience before an APRN can practice independently, and the original legislation was at 2. And so I worked with one of my Senate colleagues, Senator Kelda Royce from the Madison area, who is a huge supporter of this bill. And, you know, we broke and had a recess on the floor, and I went up to her and said, you know, Senator, if I can get your support along with the support of some other Democrats, I am willing to go to 3. I can't go to 4 years because Wisconsin would be the only state in the nation that has done an APRN Modernization Act, and every other state is at either 2 years or 3, or some are at none. So I don't know why we would make Wisconsin an island on this front, because all we would be doing is creating an arbitrary barrier for these advanced practice nurses. And to her credit, she stuck with us. I know she took a lot of criticism and flack from some of her colleagues for it, but Senator Royce, along with Senator Larson, stuck with us when the bill was brought up before the Senate floor earlier this year.
As sort of a sub-question to this, and I do want to get back to the bills that were vetoed, do you think that a little bit of, we don't encourage people necessarily to do this in our neighborhoods or anything, but when it comes to state next to state and some of that, is there a little bit of the keeping up with the Joneses that has to be involved when it comes to looking at keeping population or some of the other factors there?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, from my standpoint, especially as it relates to, you know, what can we do to increase access of care, especially in our rural and underserved areas, it's taking a look at what other states have done, because I often tell people, you do not need to reinvent the wheel. If there are things that work in other states, then there's no reason to expect that it wouldn't work here. Now, it doesn't mean necessarily taking a cookie cutter approach, but, you know, identifying models that have worked in other places. And that's what's so great about our country. As Benjamin Franklin once said, the states are the laboratories for democracy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in this instance, we've seen where this legislation has been enacted. It's been truly a benefit for not just the providers, but for patients. And so, you know, this is where I think we have the opportunity to, you know, adopt language that's been successful in other states and apply it here to Wisconsin, because at the end of the day, it's about doing what's best for the people we represent, and also, again, making sure that in areas where there is a shortage of providers, that we can sort of help fill that void. And as I said on the Senate floor on Tuesday, this legislation is not meant to replace the role of physicians. It's to help supplement where we have deficiencies in the number of providers in key areas of the state.
And when it comes to the other bills that were vetoed on in your notes, I see, what other bills were vetoed on?
Probably one of the big ones, they're all fairly important, don't get me wrong, but one of the big ones was dealing with PFAS contamination. So there has been a lot of discussion in the media, and, you know, I think this is one of these areas where, unfortunately, being 2024, it's an election year, politics is getting in the way of good public policy. And so in the state budget, where I'm a member of the Joint Finance Committee, we set aside $125 million to deal with PFAS contamination that was contingent being released upon passage and signage of legislation being enacted into law. So two of my colleagues, Senator Eric Wimberger from the Green Bay area and Ralph Coles from the Alloway area up in northeast Wisconsin, where this has been a real issue, did their due diligence and worked on comprehensive legislation that would provide an avenue forward, this $125 million to be released to give landowners the tools and resources to test and then also deal with remediation and contamination. Because what has happened is that, you know, farmers and landowners have been given permission to spread bile sludge, oftentimes coming from leachate from landfills, onto their properties, unbeknownst to them, not knowing that, oftentimes this material, this bile sludge, has PFAS in it. And the real unfortunate, sad part about this is that they were given permission by the DNR, and at the time, the DNR was not aware that there were PFAS contamination. So there was one provision in this bill that seemed to draw the largest amount of criticism from the governor, and it was one of the reasons why he said he vetoed this legislation, is that, you know, if an individual may have spread some of these contaminants and that without knowing that there were PFAS in them, that they shouldn't be held liable because it was through no fault of their own that they were given permission by our very own state government to do so. And so, unfortunately, the governor vetoed this legislation. And unfortunately, again, politics has taken a front row seat as opposed to a back row seat on this. And the governor has been trying to say that the Joint Finance Committee can just come in and release these funds. And that's not how this works. One committee in the state legislature cannot override a governor's veto. It requires a two-thirds vote from both the state Senate as well as the state assembly. So we don't have an avenue currently for this money to be released, which is unfortunate, but it's why we felt so compelled to come in and override the governor's veto. And again, our hope is that we can compel the assembly to do the same, and hopefully we can do the right thing here and correct the mistake in the governor's veto and get these funds out to communities and people who need it most.
When it comes to somewhat the political game that you're mentioning there, we both are adults and we understand that both parties are guilty of this. Do you, from your constituents, hear the same thing that I'm hearing from our communities? They're tired of that? That they're tired of the game? Well, the game, nobody's being fooled here. Everybody understands. In fact, a lot of people on both sides of the aisle are quite blunt about it now and saying, we're not going to vote on this because it's an election year and we're going to wait until our guy gets in office if he does and things like that. While the American people sit in the middle of this game and we're the ones that suffer.
Yeah, no, you're 100% spot on, James. In fact, I'm hearing it constantly. So as we all know right now, it's everyone's favorite season in Wisconsin, and I don't mean spring. It's campaign season, and I know that's a really bad joke, but I've been going out there just about 5 to 6 days a week, going door to door to hear what's on people's minds. And this issue got brought up recently, about a week and a half ago, when I was going door to door in the city of Tolma, and I had a conversation, and these are individuals who probably lean a little left to center, but they've always admired the work and the approach that I've taken. And they asked the question pretty bluntly. They're like, what is going on with the money that's supposed to be going to deal with PFAS? And I said, look, if you've got a few minutes, I will peel back the curtain. I will give you the ins and outs and everything that's going on. And after what I just explained to you, they were scratching their head. And they're like, we don't understand this. And I said, I know, because, this is been turned into a political issue. And at the same time, while it's trying to be used as a wedge to drive us apart, the average person doesn't care, because there are homeowners right now whose properties are rendered completely useless, their most important asset, because their well is highly contaminated with PFAS. And so while we sort of, bout and joust down to Madison over who's to blame, people don't care. They just want results. And I think that's one of the primary reasons why we took to the floor to do this, because we're trying to get past the political brinksmanship and try and provide results for the people who need this most.
We're speaking with Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston right now. And speaking of speaking to your constituents and new people, you have some new districts. New legislative districts were announced in Wisconsin. How is it going meeting some different areas and talking to different people? How are you enjoying that? Or how is that going?
It's one of those, it's sort of bittersweet. So when you take a look at the new 24th Senate District, I used to have all of Portage County. I now have portions of it. Portage County got split up three ways. I used to have the majority of Wood County, with the exception of Marshfield and a few townships in the northwest corner. And now I just have basically the city of Wisconsin Rapids and South, got completely taken out of Washerer County. I lost the city of Sparta over Monroe County, but maintained the eastern half. Picked up most of Juneau County, which is all new to me. And I previously had the eastern half of Jackson County, and now have all of Jackson County. And when I say it's bittersweet, it's tough, because after 7 years of doing this, you build up really strong relationships within the communities that you formerly represented. But At the same time, I try and be optimistic and find the silver lining in all of this. And you know, the fun part for me is now I'm going into new communities I wasn't necessarily familiar with, whether it's places like Osseo or Black River Falls, or in places like Mauston or New Lisbon, Camp Douglas. Just yesterday, I was in the village of Wilton going door to door, and you know, it's fun because you get to introduce yourself to new people and learn about new issues that are impacting that area. And it comes with the territory. I mean, typically we do this once every 10 years under, you know, the new environment. You know, we're doing this every 2 years, it seems like. But it doesn't change my approach. I'm going out there and taking my message directly to the people. And more importantly, I'm hearing directly from them what's on their minds and, you know, what their ideas and concerns are moving forward and how we can work together to address those.
Sometimes the people come to you and come down to Madison. And recently, you sat down with some local members of the Wisconsin Aging Advocacy Network for their Aging Advocacy Day. How did that go? What were some of the things you discussed?
Well, it was great. It's a great organization. They do tremendous work in advocating for our older population here in the state, which, by the way, is not getting any younger by the day. The silver tsunami, as they call it, is becoming a real reality here in the state. And so that presents some challenges. It also presents some opportunities. And some of the things that they really try to focus on is, you know, how can we be more preventative as it relates to our senior population and trying to invest on the front end rather than having it become an issue where we're spending more on the back end, whether it's things like providing grant dollars for agencies like our ADRCs who do a tremendous job and great programming, and things like, for instance, fall prevention grants. You know, there was legislation that came up towards the tail end of this session that would have provided grant dollars for our ADRCs and other organizations around the state to help with fall prevention. Unfortunately, when we heard testimony, there have been instances where, you know, senior citizens fall in their homes or in a nursing home, and oftentimes because there's concerns that they don't want to increase their injury that they may have incurred, that oftentimes they have to wait until a fire department or an ambulance shows up where they can be lifted and evaluated, which in some instances, this can take hours, if not several hours, which is just horrifying. And you think about the lack of dignity that sense of that individual who has worked their entire life and now find themselves laying on the floor waiting for an ambulance or a firefighter to show up to give the medical treatment. I mean, it's heartbreaking. Now, unfortunately, that legislation didn't pass because it was fairly late in the session. However, already one of the things that they're preparing for is how can we work with them going into the next state budget to hopefully provide some more resources and grant dollars to ensure that our ADRCs and other organizations can utilize those funds and help out our most vulnerable here.
Recently, one of the fun things we have to talk about with you is your On the Job series. You were recently at our Southwood County Humane Society a little while ago, and a shout out to you for that. I know they really enjoyed themselves. We had Tim in with our Pet of the Week last Thursday, and he was raving about your work and how all that. And we got to talk to you a little bit about it. Now, just recently, you were at the Food Plus Farm Exploration Center in Plover, which a lot of us have been enjoying and checking out. How did you enjoy yourself?
It was a blast, and this one was really kind of unique for me. It was sort of a double header. So when it was being constructed, I actually got to spend one of my days on the job with Hooper Construction and help install the HVAC system at that facility. And you know, since it's been completed, I am just blown away. I've said numerous times that I have learned that when individuals like Dick Pavelski have a vision and a dream, it is best to get out of the way and hop on the bus or get run over by it, because he will see it through to the end. And they are doing a tremendous job. Andy Wrights, who's the executive director over there, has put together a phenomenal team where they're really trying to connect people to where their food comes from. Because even I've heard it from adults who say, you know, their food comes from a grocery store. Well, to a certain extent, that's true, but there's a lot of other steps that go into that process before that food ever shows up to the shelves of a supermarket. And you know, it was great because I got to spend some time. There were some school groups that came through, and I got to, you know, explain to them what my role is in state government and, you know, how I work with farmers in our area to promote our strong egg industry, and even got to see some of the test plots and research that they're doing. And also, the partnership that they created with FarmShed, who was on site that day, because they received a I believe it was a 15 or $12,000 or $15,000 grant from the community foundation, because what they found out last year from their test fields is that at the end of the year they had all this produce and they couldn't take it anywhere. And you know, organically, they got connected with FarmShed, and now they're going to be taking all the food that is grown off of their test fields at the Food and Farm Exploration Center, and going to be donating it directly to our food pantries in the area and other organizations that help individuals who might be struggling to get adequate food. And so it just drives home why I love Central Wisconsin so much, is that when we identify a problem, organizations roll up their sleeves and they get to work and find solutions.
I think you're one of these on the job series. We're going to have to get you into the radio station here. We're going to have to get you in here, have you learn a little bit of what we do. I think it'll be fun.
I'd love it.
Yeah, it'll be great. I did want to wrap up, sir, with the last minute that we had, complimenting you and mentioning to the audience, just in case they did not know, that you were recognized the other day by the Legislative Champion Award from our Wisconsin Association of Free and Charitable Clinics. Congratulations on that. What did that mean to you?
It meant a lot. And again, you know, in my time since I've entered the state Senate, some of the areas that I've really tried to dial in on is how can we increase access to care in underserved areas, and especially for our most vulnerable populations. And our free and charitable clinics do an incredible job all throughout the state. And in fact, it was a couple of sessions ago now that I had worked with State Representative Todd Novak, and for the first time ever, we actually created a state statute where we are going to continue to provide state resources for our free and charitable clinics because of the work that they do, whether it's delivering on oral health care, helping prevent individuals from utilizing our emergency departments as their primary access to health care, which is the worst place to get primary care because it's the most expensive. And so really, it's a win-win. These clinics oftentimes are run by volunteers. And the one that I visited most recently was over in Sparta, where they have a free and charitable clinic housed right within the Mayo Clinic. And you know, hearing the work from, you know, whether it's their pharmacists, their nurses, their doctors, their director, and it's just remarkable work. And so, you know, it meant a lot. You know, it's always great to be recognized for, you know, the work that we do, but ultimately they deserve the credit because they are the ones who are, you know, donating their time to take care of those who need it most and who might not have health insurance or who might not have the ability to see a primary care physician. And this is another prime example where organizations like our free and charitable clinics help fill that gap and help fill that void in our communities all throughout the state.
Always appreciate the time, sir. If people want to reach you, how can they do that?
Yeah, if anyone needs to get a hold of me, feel free to reach out to my legislative office. Our number is 608-266-3123. Shoot us an email at sen.mylastnametestin@legis.wi.gov. Follow us on social media. And of course, as I mentioned before, it is campaign season. So I will be out and about going door to door. And if you see me out on the street, feel free to stop and chat. And look forward to taking our message to a Durham community near you.
Thanks for the time, Senator. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate it, James.